Turn to Psalms 49. This morning is more like last night, actually. I was really struggling which route to take today. I had a sermon all prepared, and then I found out there's going to be a number of people not here. And the sermon that I had prepared, I just felt like it'd be much better received in person. I know we're doing it online, and you can listen to it, look at it later, or watch it live. I just felt like that message would be better received in person. And just to give you a little bit of a heads up for that, I'm going to do that next week. And I don't know how many of you are familiar with the song, Truth Be Told. It's a very, very powerful, it's a new song. But it basically talks about hiding behind our wall of everything's just okay, we're fine, and pretending that it's all good when deep inside we have hurts and struggles that we need to share, maybe something that needs confessed or a burden that needs to be shared with someone else. And it's a song that's really touched me, and it's been going through my mind a lot. If you haven't heard it, just look it up on YouTube. It's Matthew West's song, Truth Be Told. But I'm going to attempt to sing that for you next week. I actually had it all practiced and ready to go today. And the sermon is going to be on that line of bearing each other's burdens. And we are going through, it's always happening, but it's more so now, so many struggles that we're dealing with. And we need to be able to have our Christian friends and family bear our load. And I think we do well with that, but there's always room for improvement on that level. So be thinking about that and be thinking and encourage you to come and attend next Sunday. So after I felt like, you know, I think I might wait on that message. And yesterday, of course, really short notice to get another sermon together. So I decided I'd go back in my notes from years past and just see if I could find a message that would fit today. And I really think the Lord led me to this one. It was kind of unusual. I opened my, I have all my sermons printed from when I started here at Montgomery. At some point, I'm probably going to stop doing that because it takes up a lot of space, but at least for now, it's nice to have them printed out. And I just opened up the first book from 2014 when I started here, and I think the first message I preached here, I think, or thereabouts, was this sermon. And as soon as I saw the title and remembered what it was about, I thought, you know, this really fits right now because we are living in a time where we're trying to prepare. You know, there's all kinds of worst-case scenarios that are going to happen, you know, all kinds of conspiracies flying around, so you need to prepare. You need to stockpile. Toilet paper was one example of that, a dumb one, but toilet paper was gold for a while, you know. Now it's in skids sitting in stores. It's like they have plenty to go around now. But I think of financially, in some cases even food, we got to save up, we got to prepare. And you know what? We don't know if that's going to do us any good. I'm not saying it's wrong to prepare. But saving up money, and I think you should save. I'm not saying you don't. But preparing for the future on earth, are we preparing for our future in heaven? So that's what I want to talk about. And my sermon title is, Where Are Your Treasures? This is going back when I first preached this sermon, when I first put it together, it was the beginning of 2013. It's hard to believe that was 8 years ago already. And Isaiah was a baby, or not a baby, he was two, a baby. And it's interesting going through here, some of my illustrations are about Isaiah, and Jeremiah wasn't on the scene yet. But in Psalms 49, I was reading this in my devotions a particular morning in 2013, and this doesn't always happen to me, but as you know, I had a lawn care business, so I was kind of rushing through my Bible reading and was going to go out and mow grass. And those that, it had to have been on a Thursday, because on Thursday is when I did my McDonald's routes and did all the McDonald's stores that I did. And so I was kind of rushing through that and I read Psalms 49, and it was one of those times where I put the Bible up and felt this, you call that reading? Get that back down and read it again. And literally, that's how I felt. I feel like the Lord told me that. So let me read what the Lord showed me. I'm not going to read the whole chapter. Psalms 49, verse 6. They that trust in their wealth and boast themselves in the multitude of their riches, none of them can by any means redeem his brother, nor give to God a ransom for him. For the redemption of their soul is precious, and it ceaseth forever. That he should still live forever and not see corruption. For he seeth that wise men die, likewise the fool, the brutish person, perish and leave their wealth to others. Their inward thought is that their houses shall continue forever and their dwelling places to all generations. They call their lands after their own names. Skip down to verse 16. Be not thou afraid when one is made rich, when the glory of his house is increased. For when he dies, he shall carry nothing away. His glory shall not descend after him. Though while he lives, he bless his soul, and men will praise him. Praise you when thou doest well to thyself. He shall go to the generation of his fathers. They shall never see light. What was really cool after reading this again, and I still remember it pretty clearly, actually. I got in my truck and hooked up my trailer and went to the first McDonald's, and that was in Gettysburg, so it was about a 20-minute drive, and started mowing. And as I was mowing, this passage was going through my head, and I was going through a struggle at that time, which led to this. But as I was mowing, the Lord started giving me the outline, and I'd get off my mower and go over to my truck and write the notes in my book and go back and mow some more and get back and write it down. It was really neat. So the Lord can talk to you on a mower. It's actually a really good place to talk to the Lord. And there's been times when I've gone through discouragement thinking about other people and their accomplishments and the wealth they've achieved and feeling like, I haven't gotten very far, you know, and I should have more to show for my efforts. And I'm sure all of you have similar thoughts like that. Human nature can sometimes be really annoying. It's never a good idea to compare yourselves to others financially. Or just compare yourselves, period. I mean, just don't compare yourselves to others. It's not a good idea. But either you're going to get discouraged because you're just not nearly as well off as they are, or you're going to get proud because I'm so much better than they are. You know, either way, it's going to leave you in not a very good place. So at that time, and I distinctly remembered, I was going through a time like that. And believe it or not, I was comparing myself to my brother. He was younger than me. And if you have a younger brother that's doing better than you, that is not a good place to be in, especially when you're young yourself. And I still consider myself young, but we are talking 10 years ago. And I really struggled with that. And I will tell you, after working through this sermon, the Lord lifted that, and I haven't dealt with it since. One of my younger brothers does better than me, good for them. So I've matured so much. Anyway, looking at the chapter there in Psalms 49, verses 6 to 11 is basically saying, your wealth isn't going to get you or your family to heaven. You're going to die and leave that wealth to others. That's great. Good. You might leave big things for other people, but that's not doing a blessed thing for you. Verses 16 to 19 basically told me that don't get discouraged if someone else is doing better financially or whatever than you, because you're not taking anything with you when you get to heaven. A rich person might get praise and glory here, and it says that in that passage. They might get all kinds of accolades for all they've accomplished, but does that do anything for them eternally? And this caused me to think about my priorities. It's not wrong to have wealth. Absolutely not. I know some very wealthy, very wonderful Christians that did great things for God's kingdom by their generosity. Wealth isn't wrong, but if we allow wealth to take our gaze off of God and take our focus off of God, then it's wrong. We need to focus on God and view anything materially as just that. It's just material. It's going to be gone, and we'll talk about that in a little while. So that led me to Matthew chapter 6. So go ahead and turn there, please. And it talks there in Matthew chapter 6. It's a very familiar passage about laying up treasures in heaven. And that's where I want to draw our text from this morning. Matthew chapter 6, 19 to 21. Lay not up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust doth corrupt, and where thieves break through and steal. But lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust doth corrupt, and where thieves do not break through nor steal. For where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. There are two types of treasures. We can place them in two scales. There's earthly treasures, and there's heavenly treasures. So let's talk about earthly treasures just for a minute. Today's culture cries for more, bigger, better, right? I know for myself, it's really easy. Man, that truck's really nice. I wouldn't mind getting that. Or those golf clubs are really nice. I wouldn't mind getting that. I don't drool over rifles or bows, anything, or crossbows or anything like that. You know, I think of normal things like golf clubs and softball bats, you know. But it's really easy to get caught up in that. Oh, that mine isn't good enough. I need the next better thing. Because surely if you spend the $600 on that brand new driver that Callaway just brought out, that's going to help you hit it a lot better. Probably. At least that's what they tell you. But there's many, many examples of earthly treasures. But they're just that. They're earthly. They don't last. Verse 19 said, that we just read, moth and rust will ruin them in time. Now, the interesting thing about this sermon was I prepared it shortly after I purchased my truck that I own right now. And I bought it brand new, and I never had purchased a new vehicle before, and I probably never will. I shouldn't say never, but likely not. And I quickly realized that there is problems with a new vehicle. The problems are they get dirty faster, and takes a lot more work to keep them clean. Older vehicles, they don't get dirty as quick. Right, Jason? Is that how that works? Jason doesn't care. He said he got his truck to work. So a point in my early owning of that vehicle, it had rained a little bit, and I knew there was a road near my parents' place that they'd recently chip and tarred, and I figured it rained, so it's safe to drive on. So I didn't go slow. The next morning, I saw these tar flicks all over everything. It's like, you got to be kidding me. And I spent several hours getting all that tar off my truck. It was an earthly possession that really disappointed me. But my point is, earthly possessions will deteriorate. Scripture says that all of our possessions one day will be destroyed. 2 Peter 3:10 says, "But the day of the Lord will come as a thief in the night, in which the heavens will pass away with a great noise, and the elements shall melt with fervent heat. The earth also and the works that are therein shall be burned up." That's a pretty telling verse. I mean, everything's going to be gone. Everything we own physically will one day be gone. And in that moment, they won't matter to us. When the end of time comes, it will not matter to us one lick how much we have and what shape it's in. Because in that moment, all that will matter is whether we have treasure stored up in heaven. So for the rest of our time, I want to talk about heavenly treasure. What is a heavenly treasure? So this might sound kind of corny, but it actually, for me, it really makes it clear. You know the statement, you can't take it with you, right? So like my grandpa would say that, you can't take it with you. And so that's his excuse for spending money on his grandchildren or whatever, or was his excuse. Anything that you can take with you to heaven is an earthly treasure. Anything else is not. So whatever you can't take with you, it's not an earthly or not a heavenly treasure. And there were three specific treasures that I feel like the Lord gave me. And I want to share them in, am I saying earthly or heavenly? I mean heavenly if I said earthly. But three heavenly treasures that the Lord specifically gave me that I just feel like they are treasures of heavenly value, that there is no value to be placed on them. And I'm going to share them in order of their importance, in my opinion. And I want you to listen closely how I share them and see if it rings true for you. But the first heavenly treasure is others. other souls are of, you can't place a value on them. They're an incredible heavenly treasure. In Matthew 5, Jesus tells us we're the salt of the earth, the light of the world, and we're supposed to share this good news. We're supposed to tell others. That's our duty as Christians. God has done incredible things for us. Why shouldn't we save or tell others about our that saving grace that God has given us? And Paul tells us that we're in debt to the unsaved. And I love that what he uses here. He says, I'm in debt both to the Greeks and to the barbarians, both to the wise and the unwise. He splits them into two extreme camps. The Greeks were elite. They were the cream of the crop, so to speak. And the barbarians, well, that was explanation enough. The wise and the unwise. He's saying he's in debt to everybody, no matter what their social status. We are to share God's love with others so we can get others to heaven. That's a heavenly treasure. Are we willing to be salt and light? You know, we all have different ways of sharing. Personally, I think a silent testimony, just people seeing how you live and behave, I think that's probably the most effective. People are watching us. What is our testimony leaving? Does everyone know that we're a Christian? I think of verbal testimonies, and yeah, there's a place for that. It's not just for the preachers and the teachers and the missionaries. You can witness to people at work. And I like the stories that I hear of some of you that have shared those, that you witness to people at work, your neighbors, you know, maybe they're annoying and you need to go talk to them and share God's love. Who knows? Witnessing can be intimidating, but God can help you with it. And then there's an active testimony. What I mean by active testimony is simply that we share our love in actions, whether it's just lending a helping hand if someone needs help or just a listening ear. Actively showing them God's love to show them, hey, Christ has done something through me, to me. I want to show him to you through my actions. And I think a great example of an act of testimony is the story of the Good Samaritan. That's a pretty incredible story. Just the fact that this man that was considered pretty low scale to the Jews, his own kind didn't help him, but the Good Samaritan did. And he showed God's love to this man that didn't even like him. Don't ever think you're a second-class Christian because you don't proclaim Christ like Peter or Paul. Discover your own method. Then get out of your chair and do it. I think one of the coolest things about heaven will be when people come up to us and say, I'm here because of you. There's a song, and it's actually getting some age to it now, but I want to read it to you, and I'm sure many of you will recognize it, but it's powerful words. I dreamed I went to heaven, and you were there with me. We walked upon the streets of gold beside the crystal sea. We heard the angels singing, then someone called your name. You turned and saw this young man, and he was smiling as you came. He said, friend, you may not know me now. And then he said, but wait. You used to teach my Sunday school when I was only 8. Every week you would say a prayer before the class would start. And one day, when you said that prayer, I asked Jesus in my heart. Then another man stood before you and said, remember the time? A missionary came to your church and his pictures made you cry. You didn't have much money, but you gave it anyway. Jesus took the gift you gave, and that's why I'm here today. Thank you for giving to the Lord. I'm a life that was changed. Thank you for giving to the Lord. I'm so glad you gave. One by one they came as far as the eye could see. Each life somehow touched by your generosity. Little things you had done, sacrifices made, unnoticed on the earth, in heaven now proclaimed. And I know up in heaven you're not supposed to cry, but I'm almost sure there were tears in your eyes as Jesus took your hand and stood before the Lord and said, my child, look around you. Great is your reward. We influence souls for heaven. That's a heavenly treasure. And I had to stop and think about Martha Horner as I was sharing this and how the Pilkertons shared with me that Martha was such an impact on them. We don't know who we're impacting. But let's store up earth or heavenly treasures in the form of other souls. And then another heavenly treasure is our family. 3 John 1 verse 4 says, I have no greater joy than to hear that my children walk in truth. Our family, our children, are precious jewels that we need to take to heaven with us. Can you imagine not seeing your family in heaven? And I know there are some here that are in that place where maybe you have a loved one that went on that you knew wasn't a Christian, or maybe you have a loved one right now that's not a Christian and you're really struggling with that. I can't fathom not having my boys in heaven with me or going there and my wife's not there. I know Scripture says there's no sorrow in heaven, but somehow to me that seems really sad. And I don't know how that's going to look. Parents are responsible to lead their children, and I feel this is mostly done by our examples. Children will model what we display to them. We can't say, do as I say and not as I do. And I tell you what, now that I have children that are older, wow, that task is getting harder and harder. Ephesians 6 verse 4, and ye fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and the admonition of the Lord. Fathers have a heavy load to carry, and great responsibility, not only protector, but a spiritual leader. Little boys love to imitate their dad. And as I prepared this, I had to think back. What I have here brought back some really good memories of Isaiah when he was about 2. Watching me when I would drive, someone was getting ready to pull out and I'd say, stay in there, buddy, or good night, what are you doing? And we're driving along and hear this little voice back there, good night, hey buddy, or something. I was like, and another thing that I would do before I had vehicles that actually were needed less maintenance, I would routinely just stick my head underneath the car and just look, see if there's anything dripping, because I had some times where, say, the water pump broke or something, and I had something leaking, and I would just look to make sure everything was dry. Well, maybe I got a little OCD on that and checked it a little bit too many times, because my little boy figured out this thing. And one time, as soon as he gets out of the car, he tucks his head down and he looks under the car. He didn't have a clue what he was looking for, but he was looking. And I think about a mother and how her mission is so incredible and the influence she has on her children. I can tell you without a doubt, I'm here because of my mom. My dad was an incredible testimony, but my mom was the one that was most active in my life. And then I want to talk to some of you as siblings. Some of you, there's not many here, but if you're watching, be an example to your other siblings. You can even do that as adults too. Because wouldn't it be awful if one of our brothers or sisters missed heaven because we led them astray by something we did? We think about our relatives, and I would be shocked if someone here said, you don't have a relative that you're praying for that's unsaved, honestly. I think we all do. Don't lose heart. God's not ignoring those prayers. His timing isn't our timing. And honestly, He wants them more in heaven more than we do. You ever stop and think about it that way? They mean more to Him than they mean to us. Don't stop praying for them. So our family is a very valuable heavenly treasure. So we have others, we have our relatives, and then we have me. And that's the order of importance, because I think me is the most important. And you think, well, that's selfish. No, it's not. The first and primary treasure that you need to lay up in heaven is your own soul. You need to think about you first when it comes to your relationship with God, because if your relationship with God isn't where it needs to be, you can't focus on these others. 1 Corinthians 2 verse 9 says, But as it is written, eye hath not seen, nor ear heard, neither have entered into the heart of man the things which God has prepared for them that love Him. And I spoke on heaven here several weeks ago on Palm Sunday. But if you ask yourself the question, am I ready for heaven? It's not something we ask ourselves enough, I don't think. Am I ready for heaven? Maybe someone here hasn't. Maybe you never asked, am I ready for heaven? Well, ask the question, because God's standing there. He wants to accept you, arms wide open. Or maybe there's somebody that's been a Christian for a long time and it's kind of like, I'm doing good and I don't need to ask that question anymore. Really, we need to ask that question every day. Am I ready for heaven? This thing, something needs straightened out. And if I stop and think about that, am I ready for heaven? There's usually something that, you know what, I could probably fix this, or I could probably change this. You know, there's always improving that needs to be done. As far as I know, no one is beyond improvement until we get there, until we get to heaven. So if we're faithful to the Lord, we're going to experience a heavenly treasure that far outshines anything we could ever imagine here on earth. And the only way to do that, and it's really quite elementary, but we need to be remembering this, we need to focus on God and not earthly stuff. If we focus on God first, all those other earthly things will fall in their correct place. And you can fill in whatever you want for things that you need to be doing to help your spiritual life. You know, need to pray more, or need to study the scriptures more, or maybe your church attendance has slacked off and you need that connection with other Christian friends, maybe some of your attitudes, whatever. You can fill those in. But whatever the case is, stop and put God first and get your heavenly treasure stored up, your soul. A couple of scriptures I want to share with you, Matthew 13:46. Who, when he had found one pearl of great price, went and sold all that he had and bought it. And then verse 44, Matthew 13:44. Again, the kingdom of heaven is like unto a treasure hid in a field, in which a man hath found, he hides, and for joy thereof goes and sells all that he has and buys that field. See, these men sold everything they had to buy something they thought was priceless. And that's what we need to do with our heavenly treasures, our souls. Sell out completely to whatever we think we need to do here on earth and follow him only. And then someday experience that treasure that goes beyond anything we can imagine. And I shared several weeks ago about heaven and just the incredible beauty and all the stuff God has been doing. And I said, imagine 6 days it took God to make this world we live in. What must he have been doing up there for the last several thousand years? And in Revelation, it talks about the 12 gates being 12 pearls. Every gate was one pearl. Can you imagine that? And we're not talking just a door like this size. We're talking a gate. They're pretty big. Of one solid pearl. The street of the city was gold, as if it was transparent glass. That'd be like those bridges that you walk on that are made of glass and you can see down like 1,000 feet. It's really freaky. Imagine walking. Well, does that mean you're going to see all the way to earth through the streets? I don't know. But this verse, in just one verse, describes things we can't even imagine. This story was printed in the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, and I have no idea what that is, but apparently it was printed there. A rock hound named Rob Cutshaw owns a little roadside shop outside Andrews, North Carolina. Like many in the trade, he hunts for rocks, then sells them to collectors or jewelry makers. He knows enough about rocks to decide which to pick up and sell, but he's no expert. He leaves the appraising of his rocks to other people. As much as he enjoys his work, it doesn't pay the bills. He occasionally moonlights, cutting wood to help put bread on the table. While on a dig 20 years ago, Rob found a rock he described as purty and big. He tried unsuccessfully to sell the specimen, and according to the Constitution, he kept the rock under his bed or in his closet. He guessed the blue chunk could bring as much as $500, but he would have taken less if something urgent came up like paying his power bill. That's how close Rob came to hawking for a few hundred dollars what turned out to be the largest, most valuable sapphire ever found. The blue rock that Rob had abandoned to the darkness of a closet 2 decades ago, now known as the Star of David Sapphire, weighs nearly a pound and could easily sell for $2.75 million. Some people throw away the priceless treasure of heaven and a life spent with Jesus for the short existence of pleasure on earth. And hey, I'm the first one to say I want to enjoy life to its fullest. But I don't want to do something in life and throw away my chance at an eternal treasure in heaven. Our treasure in heaven is priceless. Let's not throw that away. So I don't know about you, but I plan on, with God's help, serving the Lord faithfully so I can reach that heavenly treasure. The body of David Livingston is buried in England where he was born. But his heart was buried in Africa where he loved. At the foot of a tall tree in a small African village, the natives dug a hole and placed in it the heart of this man who they loved and respected. If your heart were to be buried in the place you love most during life, where would it be buried? In your pocketbook? In an appropriate office space downtown? Under your mattress? In your garage? Where is your heart? So let's remember, where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. Let's pray.